Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. You remember that time? It wasn't that long ago. When Montana had 100-mile-an-hour winds, or thereabouts, or near to that, and it just didn't come and go. These were a couple of days of sustained winds. Yes, we lost power in a lot of places. The electric co-ops were dealing with it, along with some flooding in northwestern Montana. We'll be talking with Ryan Hall a bit later on. But right now, today, we're going to get into Northwestern Energy. They had 35,000 customers without power. What do you do? Those crews worked around the clock. These conditions, high wind conditions, I wonder what it's like to get on the grid and repair that during those kind of conditions. We're going to find out a whole lot more about that today as Jason Merkel will join us here from Northwestern Energy to talk about the aftermath, the recovery, our energy infrastructure, and more on Voices of Montana. So those high winds, how unnerving was that? That's the question I kind of have, or I found out. You know, I've been in Montana all my life, so I've seen some windstorms and some snow and some heavy rains, and this extended wind event day after day, I was unnerved by that. And I can't imagine how it would be for folks like Jason Merkel. He's vice president of distribution operations at Northwestern Energy, and they've been there an awful long time, 30 plus years. Jason, we welcome you. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Tom. I'm doing great.
Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I appreciate that. I've said that, you know, when all those crews are out there working, the wind was, especially the sustained gusts, or not the gusts, but just that sustained mile per hour as well. That was a bit unnerving. What was going on through your guys' minds?
Well, we had a lot going on.
Had a few things to do, 17. Yeah.
We really did. Those early morning hours of the 17th is when that front started hitting our western edge of Montana. And what really made this storm unique, or really two things in my mind, one is just the breadth of the storm. Typically in Montana, one advantage that we have as a utility is a storm will come into our state, it might clip two of our divisions. We have six divisions across Montana. The divisions are pretty much the larger cities. You've got Butte, Bozeman, Helena, Great Falls, Billings, you get the picture.
Mm-hmm.
So there's six divisions, and typically a storm will hit a couple of them, which allows our resources from the unaffected divisions to be able to support those divisions. That wasn't the case this day, because all divisions by the end of that day on the 17th were impacted by this storm. An additional factor was it was so unseasonably warm, the ground wasn't frozen, and these large trees that sit in our fine state, those root balls didn't have the advantage of being frozen into the ground as well. So they were just toppling over.
Yep.
And it really was a mess. And when it wasn't trees, it was trampolines flying into our substations. And we had stories of a little bit of everything, Tom.
Yeah, and you know, I want to go into that here. Feel free to tell us those stories, because we have so much respect for the crewmen, and I know it's a lot of work on the ground, but also the up in the air as well. And during high winds like that, I can hardly imagine the challenges that they faced there. So share some of that with us. But it was over, like 90% of those outages were restored by the evening of December 18th. So you guys got right on it, did some real hard work. I mean, that was 35,000 customers. And how did the system respond? And I know the customer response has always been good in Montana.
Well, thank you for that, Tom. I'm going to correct your numbers a little bit.
You do.
We actually had, through the series of the event, we had 80,000 customers that were impacted at one time or another.
Gotcha.
At the maximum, we had close to 50,000 customers that were out of power on the 17th. That peak occurred about in the evening hours of the 17th, so around 7 o'clock or so. You're absolutely right. We had crews out. Now, you have to understand that for these line crews, they live it and they love it. And the other unique factor about this particular storm was the duration of it. Often a storm like, in contrast, in July of 2024, we had a significant wind event that just hit Missoula. Well, that wind event, that severe wind event, lasted about 30 minutes in total. And then the bad weather was gone, and we were into recovery for
right.
several days.
Yeah.
This event, they had to work through the storm as it was occurring. There were trees still falling, and we had to understand what we were going into it in order to keep our employees and our contract employees that assisted us with this out of harm's way. So it was a bit of a war zone that first day from the reports from the field.
What's different with a wind event in terms of getting out there and repairing damage?
The problem with a wind event, especially such a widespread wind event, is you just don't have that advantage of localization. We had outage and problems that occurred throughout our system. Our system is 25,000 miles of electric line.
Yeah.
So that's enough to run around the equator one time. We have 400,000 power poles, 440,000 power poles with transmission. So we have more power poles than we have customers. What I was really impressed about with our system is that we only had about 200 structures, actually short of that, 180-something, transmission plus distribution, that we had to replace. But those 200 were in 200 different locations and miles apart. We had roughly about 90 line crews, contract plus internal, that supported this effort. But we were really spread out, and much of our impact was in the rural areas that were hard to get to. We had to deal with downed trees blocking the access of what we needed to do to get to the line, Steve, and restore lines. That was probably one of the largest obstacles that we dealt with, was just access.
Were there temporary measures that you take? I mean, I'm curious because I know for power, you can reroute at times, but with such a widespread event like this, that probably wasn't much of an option in that regard. So you had to get out there and find where the trouble was first, the transmission repairs. Maybe talk about locating those trouble spots. What's the process for finding out where, that the electricity, so to speak, dies?
Our control centers that are located in for Montana, in Butte, Montana, we have a control center for transmission. We also have a control center for our distribution systems. And they have pretty good situational awareness to be able to tell us in the field, our field personnel, which line segments are out and which are problematic. And you're absolutely right. Our transmission Most of our substations, we have right around 400 substations in Montana, and most of those substations are what's called looped fed. They can be fed from multiple directions. Now, this storm did take out a significant part of our transmission system, but it's not always a permanent line fault or a structure going down.
Yeah.
It can be lines coming together or debris that temporarily flies into the line, then leaves. So there's really no repair to be made, but we do have to patrol and understand each line segment that went out. You talked about where you were headed there a little bit, Tom, was strategy. And we do have a defined strategy in how we go about restoration. And it can be very frustrating for customers because initially we need to focus on our transmission system, or at least the necessary transmission system, to recover those substations. The way the electric world works, you have transmission substations and then distribution circuits that ultimately reach out and serve much of our residential and commercial areas. So we focus on that from a recovery standpoint, transmission first, but only the necessary transmission to get those substations on, and then we need to work on circuits. And then last but not least, we start working on specific outages. And so what's created by that is a resident that's out of power, they'll see us in their neighborhood. And then it's frustrating for them because they'll see us drive off because we're still working on those higher voltages and restoring power. I think most probably misunderstand that we need to have that circuit energized that's right outside of your house before we can address your individual home.
Boy, we're tied together in more ways than we recognize, and we need each other in more ways than we often acknowledge as well. That happens especially with these wind events and these electric crews, Northwestern Energy. I'll be speaking with Ryan Hall a bit later on, too, with the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. They went through much of the same thing, Missoula Electric Co-op, Flathead Electric, Fergus Electric. And then a lot of times, too, I remember during these events at other times, usually we get hit with, wind and cold. Winds are not 60 miles an hour consistently. They're about 30 or 25, whatever. They create, challenges, but everybody rallies around in such a widespread event. As we welcome back Jason Merkel, Vice President of Distribution Operations for Northwestern Energy. Been a long time with the company, gas production, gas transmission, hydro generation, knows an awful lot about all that gas and electric distribution as well. And recapping that major wind event in mid-December. Jason, I appreciate you coming on here as well. Just a lot of things to kind of cover, but I want to talk about, first of all, let's do this. Walk that line for us. You got out there, you saw some of the damage. I'm sure with today's technology, you're getting a lot of photos. Everybody is like all in on this one. What did you see?
You know, probably the majority of what impacted us and our majority challenges during that day really was the consistent wind throughout the day, the debris in addition to tree issues, other issues like that impact those lines. I mean, there were some of the right-of-ways that we're talking really old-growth trees that would fall, and if they didn't impact the line and the line was impacted, they impacted our access to the line. One of the most interesting photos that I received, this came from Eastern Montana, but there was actually a full-size trampoline that was wrapped around our bus work at a substation. So we dealt that day with just anything and everything that went airborne. And it was amazing how much went airborne. In some cases, we had roofs or portions of structures, homes that would end up in our power line, and we would have to deal with that, make those safe before we could even begin to think about restoration and recovery of power.
Yeah. 25,000 miles of transmission lines, you said, in Montana. I mean, you know, that's an awful lot. And a lot of this, still a pretty big state, some wide open areas. The difficulty in getting to some of those more rural places, I suppose, complicates all that repair.
Yeah, that if you were to really focus in on where are the outages occurred, I mean, we certainly had outages in our urban areas, large trees falling, all the things that I just described. But the majority impact really of this storm really did occur in more of our rural areas, and with a lot of miles between issues. And two of our hardest hit areas, probably because of heavily forested, western Montana, west of Missoula, that Thompson Falls Plains, Superior, up to Taft, those areas were hit. They're also the corridors for many of our transmission systems. And then in Helena was another division that was hard hit. And in the area hardest hit there, not a lot of customer count, but for those customers, very important customers in that Marysville area, Lincoln area. And they were probably hardest hit and out the longest. From the beginning of the storm that hit the morning of the 17th, for the most part, the winds were still blowing for a couple of days, but certainly not with the intensity that they blew on the 17th. And by about that was on a Wednesday, and by Thursday afternoon, we had restored power to 90% of our customers that were out. So we probably had about 6,000 or 7,000 customers that unfortunately they went for quite a duration, and they were spread all over our rural territory.
Yeah.
And we were focusing in on them with 90 plus crews. We had 90 line crews that were engaged in this, and then we had an additional 20 tree crews that focused on just the tree issues.
I got a couple of questions. One would be about the equipment inventory, but I'm picturing, if there were any broken lines, that, you know, the danger of that. And honestly, I'm picturing this, you know, some linemen wrestling with a loose line whipping in the wind, so to speak. I know there's probably more efficient methods than to wrestle with a line like that. But, go ahead and paint that picture again of the difficulties of repair. Did that kind of happen? Did you have some broken lines?
Oh, we certainly did.
Yeah.
Throughout this event, as I said, we only had about 200 structures.
Yeah.
And that really points to the resiliency and our investment over the years within our power systems. Having 200 poles, or structures, as we call them, go down when we have 440,000 poles. I mean, you're looking at less than 1%. We certainly had conductor issues where trees fall into line, break conductors. I think we replaced about 7 miles of line. But again, 7 miles out of our total transmission plus distribution circuits equals about 25,000 miles. That's a pretty small percentage that was impacted. So the system really did perform well from a resiliency standpoint. I know that I'm proud of that our company, our employees, we've been focusing a lot into reliability. Our systems were a very rural, unique utility because we're so rural, but we're large. We're very expansive, but we still operate very near first quartile reliability. And through this event, the resiliency of our system really showed.
Jason Merkel again with us here from Northwestern Energy, Vice President of Distribution Operations. And a lot of this, I'm sure, kept you up at night. Equipment inventory. I remember going back to that 2024 storm and other storms as well, especially, you know, we've looked at shortages for a number of reasons as well. Has that been settled? I mean, I go back and remember talking to energy officials about, you know, we can't get, you know, this piece of equipment or that piece of equipment. You know, talk about how that hits the inventory.
Yeah, we actually hold a fairly substantial inventory.
Yeah.
For events like this, specifically poles, wire, those type of materials, the supply chain lag that was there probably 4 or 5 years ago has really lessened. Where we really see inventory-related issues is with the large equipment, large transformers, breakers, switches, that technology component of our systems. The industry really has seen a lag there, and I just can't say that has subsided. The demand and everybody in the nation is investing into their infrastructure, not only to build capacity for more load, that's impacted supply chain, but it really has at least reduced to those type of devices on our system.
Jason, can you give me a 20-second closing thought here? What's your takeaway here, really quickly?
First and foremost, I'm always proud of our employees. Really proud of our employees. They rise to the occasion during events like these. And, you know, we have strategies, incident command, those type of processes and procedures that increase the effectiveness.
Appreciate all the information and all the hard work, and give those guys and gals a pat on the back for it. 70-mile-an-hour winds, 90-mile-an-hour gusts. Get out of town. Well, that'll blow you right out of town. Montana's wind event here in mid-December. We're getting back on that here. Ryan Hall to join us, communications director, Rural Montana Magazine editor as well. The Montana Electric co-ops have dealt with this much in the same way as we heard from Northwestern Energy as well. But again, quite a large swath here. So you go from east to west or north or south. You've had a co-op out there restoring power and dealing with this. Ryan Hall, again, communications director, to talk about how that aspect of cooperative electricity plays out. Good morning, Ryan. How you doing, sir?
Doing good. How are you doing, Tom?
Doing good. Quite an event. You know, that was less than a month ago or thereabouts a month ago. You know, when you look back at it, Ryan, what's your impression? What did and we'll talk. I want to talk about too what you guys saw on the line as well. But you kind of got, you know, 30 days to reflect on the activity there. What's the takeaway for you?
The main thing for me is what you just said, Tom, the widespread issue. Like, we deal with windstorms. Our co-ops have dealt with outages from wind for years. You know, we're located in Montana, but we're working on a timeline for rural Montana that you will see next month. And like, the first reported co-op outage was 7:18 in the morning. And then we had another co-op that didn't report its very first outage till 4:57 p.m. that afternoon, and that was the difference between Missoula Electric and Norval in Glasgow. So Missoula's getting their power back on and recovering when it's just hitting the east side of the state and starting to wreak havoc.
You guys have a long tradition of helping each other out, and whether, you know, electric utilities will do that, whether it's Northwestern Energy or, you know, co-op members, so to speak. It was a little more difficult because of the widespread nature in this event.
Absolutely. Several of our co-ops put out calls for what we call mutual aid, and I only know of one or two instances where it happened because all their, you know, brother and sister co-ops were dealing with the same thing. Luckily, we have a lot of contract crews that we work with for the big projects. We were able to call those folks and get some contract help that came out and help restore power for some of these co-ops. But you're right. We rely on our mutual aid a lot because a lot of times things are fairly isolated. And in this case, co-ops even 3-4 counties away couldn't send help because they had the same thing coming down at them.
What did you see? Walk the line for us virtually.
You know, devastation. I've seen photos from this storm that I've never seen before. There was one photo actually from your area, from Yellowstone Valley in Huntley. They had one photo from a road where a pole was turned about, you know, 45 degrees across the road. And then behind it, there was just pole after pole on the ground. And there was just several poles laying across the road, and then another one that was at the start of the line, like I said, at 45 degrees. I've got a picture in front of me from Bighorn County where the top of the pole is laying on the ground, but the rest of the pole is still standing. Trees laying on lines, snapping lines, crew members working in just incredibly difficult conditions to try to restore power because we just had so many out across the state.
Yeah, from your guys' perspective, you know, what's different with major wind damage and in terms of repair? Those lines, there's a lot of movement in them. And so I imagine it's different than, you know, a blizzard. Maybe not so much. But, you know, kind of walk us through that aspect of recovery.
The main thing is making sure that our guys are safe. You know, yeah. You've got to be in bucket trucks. And, I mean, I've been – I don't know if you've gotten a chance to be up in a bucket, Tom, but I've been in a bucket for communication stuff, and even light winds, you can feel every movement up there. So yeah. Our guys have to be aware of what they're working on and making sure they're maintaining safe distances and safe practices. We do everything to get our guys out there and work as hard as they can, but we have to have safety being paramount. And then the other thing with a wind event as opposed to a blizzard is the longevity. A lot of times you can get hit with those blizzards and storms, and while they can be devastating, they're fairly quick. We had several crews that had to take mandatory rest while there were still outages and then come back in the morning just because they were working such long hours, and we have mandatory rest due to safety concerns. And that doesn't always come up in blizzards and situations like that where something comes through hot and heavy and moves on. I mean, this was an all-day windstorm with highs throughout the day. You know, I've got highs in front of me from in the morning till in the evening, and that just makes it really hard to be able to get out there and recover when, as you're fixing something, something else is getting hit.
Ryan Hall with us again, Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. It's mtco-ops.com for more information. Talk about the outages. Talk about the customer response to that.
You know, there's outages all around. I think you've already said Flathead Electric had 30,000. I'm looking here just down all these different co-ops. We had 7,000 out in Park Electric. Southeast Electric had all but four members out at one point on the 17th. We've got 8,000 out in Missoula, 3,500 at YVEC. So there was just widespread outages. The one thing that we're very lucky with is, as you know, if you're a customer of electric co-op, you're a member. You're a member owner. So yep. A lot of these folks are invested in their co-op. They are friends. They are neighbors. They are family members of these linemen, these board members, these managers. So most of our folks are very understanding, very helpful. Every time these things happen, we have guys come out with their vehicles asking if they can help with anything. We have people that deliver food and snacks to these crews. Our folks very much treat them like community because they are a part of the community. So while no one likes to have their power out, we have a very understanding group because statewide we're well over 99% reliable this this doesn't happen unless an event like this causes it to happen in the country.
Yeah, I've never seen those sustained winds like that for not for like 3 days at a time. So I'm sure that complicated things. I'm looking at grid resilience as well, and there's a larger discussion about energy and need and increasing our energy to meet those demands if we can. Those discussions include these distribution lines and the entire grid resiliency. What do you take away from this, or what do you see this not only teaches our utility members, but teaches all of us across the country about how to better prepare for this?
Well, I mean, the trick is, like you said, resiliency and redundancy. Where we can, we try to have, where if one substation goes down, it can be switched from the other, and you do that when you can. And one of the takeaways about this that isn't being talked a lot, because this is so amazing, the damage that happened, and this will be a story we're doing in the future, is the damage that didn't happen, Tom. So Glacier Electric had a high speed in their area of over 100 miles an hour, and they're not even in my timeline. They had very few outages, just in the double digits was all they had. And it's because they've been hit so hard by wind in the past that they have just really worked to fortify and make their lines resilient to be ready for events such as this. And they were, and they handled it very well. So there are lessons to be learned on what can be done to minimize the impacts of something like this. You're never going to prevent it. You're never going to make it where there's no outages, but Glacier Electric is a story of some co-op that went through this before and took lessons from it.
And what were those lessons? I mean,
I will be honest with you, Tom. I have not made that call and had that story yet.
Right,
I can't wait to find out. That'll probably be in our March issue. We're working on the windstorm story right now with the timeliness and getting that out for our next issue. But follow up with that. We will have those answers. And I'm as interested as everyone else to see what Glacier did to be able to, survive this fairly well despite high winds and to have a fortified system. So I will get those answers for you, but I'm not going to pretend I have them right now.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And folks, you will find those answers in the Rural Montana magazine. Ryan is the editor of that magazine, and you do a really good job. It really is one of those publications that Montana just should pick up and read about. Let's talk about the cooperation, emergency shelters. I mean, how did you guys collaborate for safety, you talked about your employees, but the customers as well?
As far as how each of those were handled, you're going to bring up my favorite quote that I think I say every time I'm on your show. If you visited one co-op, you've seen one co-op.
Yeah.
And so each co-op handles that differently. Obviously, there are resources and options and things they can help with a lot easier, say, in Kalispell than in, Glasgow. And so each co-op worked with their community, worked with their emergency services. We were in contact with state DES, and each co-op works within their area to, take care of those needs and help the community where it can and make sure that power gets restored where it needs to be first and all those type of things. So that was a community by community and co-op by co-op basis, but everyone worked with their appropriate agencies and with the shelters that were being set up the best they could.
And a lot of things worked here during this storm as well. One thing I note is that I've not seen a lot of, injury reports on this. And that's kind of remarkable, with such a sustained, and there was debris flying around as well. Comment on that.
Yeah, absolutely. We've all seen the videos of the trees being knocked over, power lines going on roads. And I credit this to Montanans. I mean, we've been through these storms before. Like you said, not sustained for 3 days since I've been here. But we've certainly all seen high winds. We know what to do when we see power lines on the road. We know what to avoid. We know how to stay in safe areas and not be out when objects are flying around or, a trampoline went through my neighborhood end over end, and we all, know what those dangers are. So I think Montanans, recognize how to behave and what to do in these situations. Don't drive on the highways. You know, I was actually coming back that day from a Hutterite colony that we're doing a story on in February, and I saw three semis that were turned over on the highway coming back from Conrad to Great Falls. So there was definitely some dangers out there, but I think for the most part, people realize that when we get winds 80, 90 miles an hour, that it's best to, you know, make those trips another day.
Yeah, right. We got that taste of hurricane-level winds up here, too, and not fun. Ryan Hall, again, with this Montana Electric Cooperatives. It is mtcoops.com, the association. He's communications director, and as mentioned, too, Rural Montana editor. Let's pick up another area here, too. The co-ops have been, I got 2 minutes. Thank you, Cody. The co-ops have been mentioned in some pitch calls by certain solar energy companies, and there's maybe some things that need to be cleared up about those.
Right, and I heard the 2 minutes, so I'll keep it brief. But first off, there's ads running on your guys' station. Thank you so much for giving out that awareness. And then there is an article in the January Rural Montana, so if people haven't seen it yet, please pick it up and take a look. Basically, we're having some of these fly-by nights, not the long-term reliable Montana solar folks. We have great solar companies that we partner with, that we've worked with on community solar. There are wonderful solar companies that if that's something you think would work for you, great people to work with. So I want to be clear there. But there are these some fly-by-nights that come in out of state, try to install as quick as they can. They're the door-knocking groups for the most part. I think there's only one solar installer in Montana that door-knocks. All these door-knockers are coming through, and they're telling their co-op members that Northwestern Energy is going to buy their co-ops, and their rates are going to go up 40% within the next year. So they got to install solar panels and get off the grid before their rates go up 40%. We talked to every co-op involved. We talked to Northwestern Energy, and we talked to the PSC. And every person, to a man and woman, said, there are no negotiations, there are no plans, certainly nothing's in final stages, that none of this has happened. And one thing to remind co-op members, that even if it was proposed, co-ops couldn't be sold without a vote of the membership.
Yeah.
And to get a membership to say, yes, we want 40% higher rates, would be a very hard sell.
Right. And so, you know, any more on that? I mean, have you got a place on your website that addresses that? And you've noted in the January edition of Rural Montana Magazine as well.
Right. And on our website, if you go to the website that you gave, mtco-ops.com, click on Rural Montana. It's one of the main stories right there on our page. Us and Electric Co-ops have been sharing it as well on our various social media. So it's certainly out there for people to see. But the main thing is, if you get a door knocker who says something like that, call your co-op. Your co-op will always be honest and upfront with you because you are a member owner. And also ask them where their headquarters are and where's their office. And are there any employees in Montana that you can go visit and talk with the office to make sure you're comfortable with? And if the answer is no, then I would encourage you to find a reliable Montana-based solar installer. There are several companies that have been around for 20 years. There are times and places where solar makes sense, but do it with a reputable company and not one that tries to scare you into buying it.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Ryan. Good to chat with you. I hope everything is well there, and I know we'll be talking down the road.
I always enjoy it. I appreciate you making time, and thanks again, Tom.
Yep, Ryan Hall, again, Communications Director for the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association, mtco-ops.com for more information.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.